Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
I'm Father Dwight Longenecker. I'd like to invite you to join me for a pilgrimage tour to France this September. It's based on my book, St. Benedict and St. Therese, The Little Rule and the Little Way. I'll be teaching about the spiritualities and the lives of these two great saints, and we'll be visiting the great monastery of Fleury, where St. Benedict's relics are venerated, and of course going to Lisieux to visit the childhood home of St. Therese, the Carmel where she was a nun, and the great basilica dedicated to her honor. But there's more than that. At Paris, we'll be visiting the Basilica of Sacré-Cœur, Rue de Bac with the Miraculous Medal, going on to Vézelay, Nevers with St. Bernadette, Paray-le-Monial, where the devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus was given to St. Margaret Mary, and then Chartres Cathedral, Mont-Saint-Michel, the Normandy beaches, and more. I think there's not only going to be time for instruction and learning, but also prayer and worship, celebrating Mass in the various locations, and also time for fellowship and a good bit of French food and wine, too. Come and join us this September. If you'd like to know more, go to CatholicHeritageTours.com. That's CatholicHeritageTours.com, or be in touch with me through my website, DwightLongenecker.com.
Fellowship and love.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Socks, the book blogger. Today we have with us Marge Fenelon. She's a best-selling Catholic author, award-winning journalist, and popular speaker. She blogs regularly at National Catholic Register and is a columnist for the Milwaukee Catholic Herald. Marge has appeared on EWTN and is a frequent guest on many Catholic radio shows nationwide. She's the author of several books on Marian devotion and Catholic spirituality, including Imitating Mary and the award-winning Our Lady Undoer of Knots. Today, we'll be speaking about her book, My Queen, My Mother, A Living Novena, A Marian Pilgrimage Across America. Welcome to the show, Marge.
Hey, I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for the invite, Pete.
You're welcome. Glad to have you back. So to begin our time together today, I guess we'll start in an obvious place. What did this pilgrimage involve?
A lot. A lot of travel, a lot of planning, and a lot of patience. So the whole project started, I think it's like 3 years ago already, with this idea that I wanted to highlight somehow Marian pilgrimage places in our country. And the behind that, the backstory is that was in 2016 when we were going through some very rough times with the presidential elections. And I was seeing people that I loved and admired ripping at each other. Mm. And I saw online a lot of division over politics and ideologies, and furthermore, even in the church. And this worried me. And so I prayed hard, and I asked the Blessed Mother, what can I do? What would be my little part? How can I possibly counter this? And that's where the two stars collided, so to speak. So my insatiable interest in Marian pilgrimage places and this worry that was on my heart came together, and I realized what I needed to do was go to 9 different Marian pilgrimage sites coast to coast across the U.S. and take in everything I could, history, etc., the atmosphere, the sacredness of these places, mm-hmm. and form these journeys into a book that would do basically 3 things. First of all, to bring forward our rich Catholic heritage in the United States. A lot of us, I didn't even know how rich our Catholic heritage is here in this country. Mm-hmm. And so I dug, and I found all of these awesome tidbits and more than tidbits, volumes of information about our Catholic history and heritage here in the U.S. So I wanted to bring that forward, and I wanted people to learn and appreciate that. Then I wanted people to fall in love with our country again. Mm. And, of course, I'm always, always promoting our Blessed Mother. So then that was the third goal, was to urge people, to lead people to a deeper love of Mary and appreciation of her pilgrimage places. So what did it involve? It involved going to these 9 different Marian pilgrimage sites, planning my own. I was my own travel agent, so planning, finding places to stay, scheduling flights or drives. Some of them were road trips. Thanks be to God, I was able to do that, which was very nice. And making arrangements at the shrines and the other pilgrimage sites for my presence there, and to be able to talk to historians, etc., for interviews. And then the patience part is the basically that time. That time we had so many natural disasters during that time period when I was making these journeys. We had so many natural disasters here in our country. We had wildfires, we had hurricanes, mm-hmm. we had tornadoes. Oh my goodness, we had everything. And so a good number of my trips had to be rescheduled. And so if anybody's traveled and had to cancel a flight or cancel a trip, you know what a hassle that could be. So all in good time, finally I was able to make my journeys and put it together in my book.
We're going to cover some of those stops in our time together today, but one of the questions I had was, how did you determine which 9 places you were going to visit? Because I know of a couple that aren't in here, so there are obviously other ones that I'm unaware of that didn't make the book or didn't make your schedule. What determined where you went?
Oh, Pete, I could write 100 of these books and never cover them all. Uh-huh. The determination came when I looked at those goals, and I had specific criteria. So I looked at the goals for the books, the love of Mary, the Catholic heritage, and our country. Each place that I chose to visit had to have something to do with United States history and our Catholic heritage in the U.S. So both of those. So that was the first part. Second of all, of course, because this is a book leading people to the Blessed Mother, of course, it had to be dedicated to Mary somehow. And then the third criteria that I had was I wanted places that were lesser known. I did that on purpose so that people would scratch their head and go, wow, I never heard of that place. That was exactly what I wanted, because I wanted people to look at this and say, wow, well, I didn't know that one was there. Well, how many others are out there? Mm-hmm. So I did the first journey, but I challenged my readers at the end of the book, now go out and do your own pilgrimages. Go find these places because they're out there. Some of them are going to be right in your backyard. Mm-hmm. It's phenomenal how many there are.
Yeah, for sure. Now, why is it important for us to acknowledge these shrines and holy places and make them a part of our own faith journeys?
Well, on a spiritual level, that connection to the divine is so important. The connection to our Blessed Mother. You know, we're sensory creatures, we human beings. And so in order to really understand the divine and connect to the divine, we need a tangible. We need to see or hear something. We need to meet someone that leads us closer to God. And so these pilgrimage places, they're that connection point. It's kind of like well, you know, maybe a lot of our listeners won't remember the old-time phone booths, but you see some of the older movies, but it kind of reminds me of that. You know, you go in the phone booth and you pick up the receiver and you're connected. You can connect to God or to our Blessed Mother. And that's what on a spiritual level, that's what's very important about these places. What is so important about visiting them and making them known is that if we don't support them, we'll lose them. And once mm-hmm. they're gone, that's it. And I actually experienced that a few times on my journeys where the place was really struggling because they didn't have enough funding, they didn't have enough volunteers, they didn't have enough visitors, and so they were beginning to cut hours and, you know, really thinking about how it might be able to survive. Mm-hmm. And that shook me up. That shook me up quite a bit. And it's still, it's part of the motivation that I'm really, that really gets me to push this book, because I don't want these places to disappear. Mm. They're such a treasure. Every single one is unique. Every single right. one is a treasure.
Hearing you're saying phone booth, I thought you were going to say you came out with a Superman cape, but okay. So,
well,
so what exactly is a living novena, and how should readers use this book?
A living novena is something that I made up, actually. Believe it or not, when I did the book, Our Lady Undoer of Knots, A Living Novena, what I did was try to bring, it was a trip to the Holy Land. That's the subject, the main subject of the book. It was a trip to the Holy Land with a Catholic Press Association, and it was a gift to me. It was during the pilgrimage of the Holy Father, Pope Francis, to the Holy Land. And so I was selected to go. That trip was literally a gift to me. It was just put in my lap. And so I knew I had to give back. So what I did was work very hard to recreate in the pages of my book the places I had been and the things that I felt and the experiences that I perceived while I was there, so that the reader could go on that journey with me. So each day of the novena for Our Lady Undoer of Knots, we visit a different site in the Holy Land, and then together we're praying for peace and in our hearts and in the world. So that's the novena aspect. And I've done the same thing with my queen, my mother, a living novena. So each place I visited, I've recreated for the reader so that the reader can sit down and really feel like he or she is there and pray with me, and that the prayer for my queen, my mother, the intention of the novena is our country and our families, the unity and the peacefulness and the dedication to Mary. So that a living novena, we're actually living in the sense that the novena comes to life. And how do you use it? However you want, really. You can do it in 9 days. You mm-hmm. can take this book and you can read one chapter each day for one day of the novena. Or maybe you want to spend a little bit more time on it. So maybe you want to do it one day, one chapter a week or a month, or who knows. It really is up to the reader and how the reader is inspired to travel this living novena. Mm.
And it's a good book, and we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back and dive into some of these locations. You've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. We'll be right back.
I have a quiz for you. What is one of the greatest gifts parents can give to their children? It's something children ask for often. When this gift is received, the entire family is incredibly joyful and transformed on the special occasion of the arrival of this masterpiece. This gift calls for faith, courage, and generosity on the part of the givers. It lasts for many decades, only getting better, changing, and developing each day. This magnificent gift is unique and can never be repeated, but a similar gift can be added approximately every year. This gift can only be given by three persons agreeing and acting. Have you guessed it yet? Yes, this profound gift is that of welcoming another child. And the three persons agreeing are husband, wife, and God. I'm Jim Littleton, forming FaithfulFamilies.com.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf. Today we have with us Marge Fenlon, and we're discussing her book, My Queen, My Mother, A Living Novena, A Marian Pilgrimage Across America. And Marge, let's take a look at a couple of these spots or stops that you had along the trip. Maybe you can give us some overviews of them. The first one I want to look at is the first one that you look at in a book, and that's the Shrine of Our Lady of La Leche. Where is that located, and what is the backstory to that one?
That shrine is located in St. Augustine, Florida. It is literally on the coast of the ocean, and the background is just astounding to me. That is the site of the very first Catholic Mass ever said on U.S. soil back in 1565, way back. It was on the Blessed Mother's birthday. So it was Spanish explorers led by Pedro Menendez. They landed there, and immediately they said Holy Mass. They had a priest with them, Father Francisco Lopez, and they had Mass. So there's the site is marked there with a makeshift, like a replica of the first altar that they built for themselves. But then immediately they established a mission there. So the mission is also home to the Shrine of Our Lady of La Leche, which is a very old Spanish devotion to Our Lady of La Leche. It's literally Our Lady of the Milk. It's a beautiful, when I first encountered it, it was kind of like, well, this is just too weird. I can't imagine the Blessed Mother nursing. But it was like, well, why not? Of course.
Mm-hmm.
Of course. And they do it so innocently, so chastely, so beautifully of her caring for her son. So then there's the statue, Our Lady of La Leche. And yes, she's nursing baby Jesus. And it's very beautiful. And so that devotion came along with them. So that became part of that mission there in St. Augustine, Florida. And the shrine is visited. It's growing. It's just growing. It's so beautiful to see this.
So the interesting thing I liked about this book is you tie this theme to each shrine. And, you know, I realized what you were doing was getting that novena aspect to it and the whole aspect of making some prayers for our country that was obviously having some disputes within it. For this one, you talk about discovering new things about people. And in our current times here in America, I think we're often trapped by this notion that we know someone because of what we're told or read about them rather than discovering the truth ourselves. How can we reverse that?
Take a breath before you pass judgment. How do we reverse that? I think we need to think about ourselves. And I know that sounds kind of weird because it's almost contrary to what we're trying to do, which is to reach out to the other. But if we look at ourselves and we realize any one person that we know does not know everything about us,
mm-hmm.
not even our spouses, they don't know every single little thing. Most, if it's a good marriage, they'll know most about us, but no one knows every single thing. And so before we go passing, assuming we know another person, we have to realize no one knows me completely. So how could it possibly be that I would completely know this other person?
Yeah, that's right. And it's interesting that somewhat was the driving force behind this book. I mean, I think that type of mentality of, taking everything at face value what you read rather than discovering the truth, at least in my lifetime, I'd say in the last 5 to 10 years, that habit has accelerated for some reason. And honestly, I think it all has to do with social media.
I agree. I agree with you. And I am praying, literally, that I can begin to counter that with this book, that people take another look at our country, at our faith, at our Catholic Church here in the U.S., and go, wow, that's not what I had assumed. That's not what I read on social media. This is completely different. And to just look for the truth, and you got to look for it because you're right. There's so much untruth out there, hitting us in the face
mm-hmm.
that it's almost impossible unless we're specifically withholding our assumptions and judgments and right. looking for truth.
Mm-hmm. We're going to bounce around here a bit on the different stops you had. On day four, you take readers to the Shrine of Our Lady of Sorrows. What can you tell us about that one, where it's at, some backstory, some history to it?
Shrine of Our Lady of Sorrows is in Starkenburg, Missouri. So it's right on the Missouri River. And it used to be, it was founded, that area, that Starkenburg, was founded by German immigrants that came and were looking for, well, new life. Mm-hmm. And they found it there in Starkenburg. The Shrine of Our Lady of Sorrows was founded by these German immigrants who, it started actually with St. Martin's Catholic Church, the parish. So, of course, they came, they wanted a place to worship. So they brought in the you know, priests. They didn't have priests all over the place in those days. So they would have traveling priests. And when the traveling priest came, they had a barn where they would say Mass. Well, in that barn, they found this statue. Just was there. Nobody really knows. They nicknamed it the White Lady. Well, that became the core of this devotion, Our Lady of Sorrows, because they had that statue as part of their devotion. They would go on processions and so on and so forth for the parish. And eventually then, of course, on the parish, once the parish was chartered and that land was actually theirs, then they formed a large part of that land into the Shrine of Our Lady of Sorrows. There's a walking, you know, walking gardens and so on, and a grotto to Lourdes, all kinds of things, stations. And then they actually built a shrine, which is separate from the parish church, which is the Shrine of Our Lady of Sorrows. And they really did, you know, it was hard. It was a hard life for them. So they really did learn how to bring their sorrows to Our Blessed Mother. And that's the basis of the shrine. So there's been quite a few miracles there. Mm-hmm. And two of them specifically, it had to do with weather and that the crops being threatened. You know, they were farmers. And one was when there were torrential rains that wouldn't stop for weeks on end, and the farmers couldn't get in their fields to plant. They took the statue, the White Lady, they took her on procession, and during the procession, the rain stopped and mm-hmm. everything dried up. A few years later, so the first was 1891, and then 1894, it was a similar miracle, but they had drought. They had terrible drought. Everything was dying. So they took the White Lady on procession, and during the procession, it started to rain and soaked everything, saved the crops. And those are the two most famous miracles. Now, they've not been approved by the church. Mm-hmm. They're anecdotal, but they are in the annals of the parish. They're in the history of the shrine, written down by witnesses. And so, our, you know, I just think of Our Lady of Sorrows, and when you're, you know, you're just so desperate, mm-hmm. and she came through for them. That gives me such inspiration.
And with all the flooding in the Midwest, maybe they should do that again.
Yeah, that would be a nice idea.
In the meditation for this, and I thought it was really interesting, you look at the melting pot of cultures in the U.S., we'll call it, and how cultural heritage affects us. You mentioned there the German farmers. How can we make our backgrounds be a positive effect on ourselves and others in our communities when there's so much division today and people seem to play off that cultural heritage rather than trying to make it a positive?
That is a really good question. And I think what it really boils down to is remembering that our heritage, our cultural heritage, our religious heritage, this was given to us by God. This was a gift given to us by God. It's a gift. It's not even necessarily something we own in the sense that we can manipulate it or, you know, we can be proud of our culture, our heritage, our cultural heritage, but to be prideful of it in the sense that we use it as a badge or a weapon, mm-hmm. that's not right, because God gave that to you, and there's a reason. That says a lot about who you are and why you are the way you are, and that's not something you make up. That's something God gave you, and so our job isn't to brag about it, but rather reflect and learn from it.
Before we proceed, and we're going to hit a couple more before we wrap up today in the last segment, I wanted to ask you, in the 9 places you stopped at, did you have a favorite that really struck you on this journey?
Oh, that they all are my favorite. But because they're all so unique. It's phenomenal how different. You know, same woman, same beautiful, blessed mother, and she's like a totally different herself. She's a different self at each time. But I would have to say, in terms of the one that surprised me or enthused me the most, was Our Lady of Prompt Succor in New Orleans, Louisiana. So Prompt Succor, Succor is French for quick help. So it's Our Lady of Quick Help. And I knew very little history before I went down there. And the shrine is administrated and owned by the Ursuline nuns, who actually came here back in the 1600s, way back, 1700s. They founded this school, and from the school, then the shrine developed. That you have to read the book. That's a longer story than we have time for. But basically, this was the time of the War of 1812. This is the specific incident that really makes me attached to that shrine. We had the British forces coming through, threatening to take over our country. Andrew Jackson, General Andrew Jackson, had this motley, tiny little crew of Americans that were all he had to work with to fight off the British. And during the Battle of New Orleans, the Ursuline nuns, and Andrew Jackson knew this, he knew they were praying for him. They prayed, some of the people, the area people gathered, and they prayed for the intercession of Our Lady of Prompt Succor that the Americans would win the battle. And against some of the most ridiculously impossible odds, the Americans won. Not only did they win it in about 20 minutes, they won that battle. Now, Andrew Jackson wasn't a believer. He didn't believe in God. But he admitted verbally and in a letter, he admitted that there had to have been some kind of divine, he called it interposition. We would call it a divine
intervention.
Intervention. Thank
you.
There you go. Thank you. Too many words and too many impressions. A divine intervention. That was the only way that battle could have been won.
Mm-hmm.
And so after the battle, Jackson and his soldiers, they actually went to the convent and had a celebration dinner with the Ursuline nuns. It's just a beautiful, beautiful piece of history that this non-believer would turn around and go, wow, no, I guess there is a God, and there had to have been a God, and it was your prayers, my dear sisters, that did this. It really is a beautiful, beautiful story. And they have a copy of the letter in their showcase. It's the original. They have all of these, you know, temperature control, climate control cases where they're storing and show these different items.
Fascinating bit of history. We're going to take one more break, and we'll come back, and we'll cover some more of the stops taken during My Queen, My Mother, A Living Novena. We'll be right back.
Marriage is ordered between one man and one woman because, like God's love, it is called to be fruitful, open to life. Well, there's a lot of confusion in the culture today, but here is some clarity in the following beautiful quote from the Catechism of the Catholic Church, 2335. Each of the two sexes is an image of the power and tenderness of God, with equal dignity, though in a different way. The union of man and woman in marriage is a way of imitating in the flesh the Creator's generosity and fecundity. End quote. Listen, be not afraid. couples that are willing to live openness to life in their marriage will receive not only many spiritual benefits, but a very practical strengthening of their marriage. I'm Jim Littleton, forming FaithfulFamilies.com.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf. We've been spending the day with Marge Fenlon, and we've been taking a little trip through her book, My Queen, My Mother, A Living Novena, A Marian Pilgrimage Across America. We're going to cover a few more stops here, Marge, while we have some time today. And obviously, we have not covered all nine, and that gives people a good reason to go buy the book. So on day six, you travel to the National Shrine of Our Lady of Good Help. Can you give us some background on this one? We just talked about Quick Help. Let's see what we have to say about Good Help.
Good Help. The National Shrine of Our Lady of Good Help is, I would say, an essential for all Catholics in this country to know about. And I really mean that. I'm not just saying it because I wrote about it. That shrine is the only church-approved Marian apparition site in the entire country. So the only church-approved Marian apparition in the entire United States happened there in Champion, Wisconsin, where the Shrine of Our Lady of Good Help is. That is way too little known. I can't believe how many people I talked to who had no idea it was there. And so that alone makes this a good reason to include it in the book. Mm-hmm. But it's just, think about it. Mary was there.
Mm-hmm.
She was there. And they can prove it. At least, you know, in a way that's reasonable enough for the church to approve that apparition.
So I got to ask the question, and I know you're from the Midwest, so I can't wait to hear this answer. Why do you think Mary chose the wilderness of Wisconsin as a place to appear?
Well, it's my home. No,
yes, I was waiting for that answer.
You know, it's Wisconsin, of course. No, what it appears to be, no pun intended, but what it seems like is the apparition took place in 1859. So back at that point, a lot of our country was just being settled. There was a lot of wilderness, as you said, in particular the northern part of Wisconsin, the parts around the Green Bay area. There were Europeans coming in, and in this particular place, Champion, these were Belgian immigrants. What was happening because of, and like we talked about with Our Lady of Sorrows, very few priests. And so what was happening was that the people were becoming a little inventive, and they were mixing some of the kind of strange spiritualist customs that they had brought from the old country, and it was getting kind of mixed in with the Catholicism. And then just under catechized in general, because there wasn't anybody around to teach the families, to teach the children about the faith, to teach the catechism. So Our Lady appeared to a young woman named Adele Brees, and she was only 23, she was very young, and asked, she had one main request, and that was teach the children their catechism. Get out there and teach. All right, I'm paraphrasing, but get out there and teach the children their catechism. And so that's why I believe the wilderness of Wisconsin, because they were in danger of losing their faith. Now, there's a lot of areas in this country that have had similar experiences, and even now. And this is why I think this apparition is so important for the United States, because when you, just like what we talked about at the opening of the show, why I even wrote the book, when you look around our country, it's as if we're in a vast wilderness. We're not knowing our catechism. We're not receiving the sacraments faithfully. We're losing our faith in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. I guess. I mean, I could go on and on. And we're getting, you know, strange other beliefs being mixed in with our Catholic faith. I just read about a she called herself a Christian witch. Like, what? Are you kidding? Okay, so that's what we're having. Well, it's very much like that with that wilderness in Wisconsin in 1859. And so when Mary appears, she doesn't appear just for that moment, for that person, and that's it. When that person's life is done, then that's all. No, she appears, and she leaves a message that is pertinent to that time, but then pertinent to all those going forward. So that's our, I want to say legacy, that's not quite the right word, but that's our mission given to us in the United States by the Blessed Mother to Adele Breese in 1859.
Mm. Quite a lesson. So I'm going to go back to something we alluded to in the first segment, and you kind of left it a little open-ended, but that at the end of the book, you wanted people to go out and discover these areas on their own. But is there a possibility of a follow-up novena to this book?
Oh, I sure hope so. I have been asked a number of times, and I will do it if God gives me the green light. So if it's made clear to me that this is what I should do, then I will definitely do it. And that a number of things would have to come into play there. But basically, the publisher would need to hear from people how much they like this book, and that they would be interested in another. That's what we're kind of waiting to see how the book does. And see what people do with it. I know a number of people who have said, "Hey, I'm road trip. I'm taking your book, and you know we're going and we're going to find some of these sites." And that's super exciting. That's exactly what I wanted. Mm-hmm. So yes, there's a possibility, and I pray for that. I pray that it will become a reality because mm-hmm. I would like to do at least one more.
That'd be great. Let's see if we can squeeze in another stop. Another area you stopped at was the Shrine of Our Lady of Martyrs. I think that's the backstory of that is very interesting. What can you tell us about the shrine and the North American Martyrs?
The North American Martyrs, there were 8. 5 were martyred in Canada. The other way around. 3 were martyred in Canada. No, it is the right. I did have the right thing. Mm-hmm. 5 were martyred in the U.S. Sorry about that. There was so much information there with that shrine that I actually would have to go back to my original notes. These are some of them Jesuit, many of them Jesuit. Some were laymen who came to teach the faith to the Native Americans. In that region, it was the Iroquois. The Iroquois, the Hurons, and the Mohawks, they were all part of the nation, the Iroquois nation. So these are I would hope that many of us are familiar with St. Isaac Yogues, because he was one of them, mm-hmm. and St. John Leland. They were two of the names that you most often hear about. But that shrine was built to honor them, because that is the spot on which St. Isaac Yogues was martyred by hostile Mohawks, and St. John the Land, and also René Goupil. Those 3 were martyred on that land. So that shrine is sacred ground. The blood of martyrs has spilled there.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the soil of that place. It's mm-hmm. it's just a phenomenal experience. And one of the, at least one of the martyrs, St. René Goupil, we know that his remains, so some of the bones from his body are buried in a ravine on that property and are still there to this day. The exact site is not marked, but they were buried by St. Isaac Yogues, who had found them and buried them there. So really what it does is it makes that entire ravine a reliquary.
Mm-hmm.
So when you go there, you really are walking on sacred ground.
Mm.
It is so beautiful, so overwhelming.
One of the points you brought up earlier was the necessity for us to visit these sites, because some of them, you know, are financially strapped, in danger of potentially closing. Of the sites that you stopped at, is there any particular ones that really could use our attention?
I could say for sure Our Lady of Martyrs definitely could use more attention. And there is also St. Mary's Mission and Museum in Stevensville, Montana. That one is not specifically a shrine, but that's a mission. Again, back to the dating to the 1800s, it was a founded by the Jesuits, and Father Desmet. Some will know him from the history books. That one also, they need more visitors. They need more support because it is really, talk about a living museum. They have preserved the buildings, the original buildings with the original furnishings. They have that all preserved. You walk there, and the only thing missing is the people. It's like a mission standing to this day, but dating way back to 1839. That takes a lot of effort to upkeep those kinds of buildings and keep them historically accurate and so on and so forth. They could really use support. And I pray for all of the places, but that one I think of most often because they have a huge task. It's not just one building. It's not just one little shrine. They have this entire area and multiple buildings, five or six buildings that they're trying to support. Hmm.
So, Marge, where can people find My Queen, My Mother, A Living Novena, A Marian Pilgrimage Across America?
They can find it at Ave Maria Press. They can also find it on my website, margefenelon.com.
All right. Well, that's all we have time for today, Marge. I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule and spending it with us. Any closing thoughts?
Yes, just one. And it's what I always close with. She's waiting for you. That's your mom. Go see your mother. Go see your mother. She is just waiting for you to come and spend a little time with her.
So there you have it. You got your marching orders. And with that, you've been listening to Off the Shelf. I'm your host, Pete Sox, the Catholic book blogger. Until next time, God bless.
Hello, this is international Catholic singer Anna Nuzzo, inviting you to join me and Father Dan Cambra of the Marian Fathers on a select international tours Divine Mercy pilgrimage to Poland and the Czech Republic. It takes place in September of 2019, and we would love for you to join us. For more information, go to my website, annanuzzo.com. Thank you, and God bless.
BreadBox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.